Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Halloween is almost upon us, but have our folk memories and our stories around the supernatural begun to wane in this country? Well, for generations, stories around fairy forts have ensured they remain protected from landowners and developers. But is that changing? And where did the folklore around fairy forts come from in the first place? Well, our reporter Brian O'Connell went in search of some fairy forts and he joins me now. Hello, Brian.
Morning, Claire.
What is a fairy ring or a fairy fort, Brian?
Well, I suppose it's something that isn't to be tampered with if you listen to some people. The history of fairy forts or ring forts, we've tens of thousands of them. They were built of earth, usually sometimes stone, broadly date from around 500 to 1000 AD. And if we look at since ordnance surveys were done in around the mid-19th century, we've lost about 10,000 forts. They've been destroyed since then. And in the past, and maybe perhaps still in the present, there were often warnings given to people not to tamper with ring forts or fairy forts, or what would happen, you'd have bad luck, worse things could happen. And mainly that was because the fairies wouldn't be too happy if you interfered with them. Like, this all sounds far-fetched, but you remember back in 1999 when Eddie Linehan, that great County Clare storyteller, he actually succeeded in saving a 15-foot tree from being uprooted. This was during a motorway construction near Newmarket. And he said it was actually a fairy bush. And then nobody obviously would go near it at that point. And there have been some other instances down through the years.
And we are getting close to Halloween. So you did go in search of a fairy fort and to test whether we still have those beliefs around them.
I began on the road towards Mill Street, coming out of Macroom, and at the bottom of a hill overlooking a fairy or a ring fort, I spoke to someone who knows quite a lot about them, Jo Kerrigan. She's author of the best-selling book, Irish Fairy Forts, Portals to the Past. And she was with me, and we talked about some of the beliefs she says are still current around fairy forts.
We're here on a fort, which is just on the slopes of Mushra, Mount Mushra, which is an airy place, a place very known to be occupied by the fairies, by the good people. And it's a fort that's been here for thousands of years. Nobody's touched it, they've protected it, they've left it alone.
So it's at the base of this hill and we can see it's a circular fort. Trees have grown around it.
I mean, really, people could have used that extra land, but they won't use that extra land. They will not touch the fort because it is bad luck. You'll see an old track leading to a farm and it makes a big goheek, a big half circle, because it won't go around the fort. It won't go through the fort, it'll go around it.
What is it traditionally we were told might happen if you interfered with a fairy fort or a ring fort?
Bad luck. Bad luck will follow you, will follow your family, will follow your cattle, will follow your crops, will follow everything. And it could follow you for the rest of your life. It's a very, very strong belief and you find it everywhere. I started looking in the school's collection from the 1930s, but when I went around the countryside, I asked people, I asked postmen, I asked farmers, and everywhere I went people said, no, bad luck, mustn't touch that, and the stories I got.
And you hear so many of those stories. I can remember growing up, there was a fairy fort or a ring fort not too far away from the house, and we were warned from a young age not to go near it.
Yep, I've got people like that around Macroom near here and near Mushra who said they were warned from childhood. And I remember one girl told me, we wouldn't even pick blackberries around it.
So do you feel, Joe, amongst the younger generation now, that there is still the same respect for that past, for that heritage, for that folklore?
You know, what's interesting about it is that they're coming back to it. That young people are coming back to it because I think they're looking for something. I mean, it's a fact that this book actually was a bestseller from the second it hit the shelves, and that's just fine, it was. But that was because people were looking for it. The older people knew it already. The younger people were saying, oh God, so this is what I've been longing for, looking for another meaning, an older way, an older way of belief. Particularly in Ireland, we have a very, very long tradition of believing in our own powers of nature, our own nature gods, because we're talking about the old nature spirits of Ireland, and that is what we did have in Ireland and what we still should have. Our nature gods are still there, and I mean, now with Halloween this week, you couldn't be more a strong time, because it's one of the thin times when they come out from behind to see how we're managing the land.
Jo Kerrigan there, the author. I wouldn't be messing with them, Brian, would you? I wouldn't test the theory.
No.
And that might be a generational thing in that younger people no longer have the same connection with folklore.
Yeah, I think that could be the case. And maybe it's also an urban-rural divide, is it, a little bit? And probably there were very good reasons for keeping people away from some of these ring forts or fairy forts. I remember actually visiting one in Tullycryan in West Clare, and it became an unconsecrated burial ground, as we call them, Killinis. So clearly the folk stories would have helped in instances to preserve the ground, to keep people away from areas like that. And what do you do if you enter one? Say, for example, you go into one by accident. You're supposed to bow, walk backwards and turn your coat inside out, Claire.
Right.
So there you go. Now, I did speak to an academic as well who's done a lot of work on this, but before we get to her, I suppose I wanted to see what people on the street thought about our supernatural connections, our supernatural beliefs. And on the way back from Mill Street, I stopped off in Macroom, the town that never reared a fool, as they say. And there I met a woman who preferred not to use her name. Now, she first told me she didn't really care too much about these kinds of stories and they were a bit far-fetched. But then, Claire, she began to tell me a story about people she knew who had bought and lived in an old house.
We have a friend and they have a house. And this house has, at Halloween a couple of years ago, before they did up the house in the summer, they did up one of the rooms. And he was inside in the room at Halloween. And he just
I'm
took out.
I'm starting to get chills now. Go on.
He put on the video in his phone, and he just videoed the room just to see. And he played it back himself, and there was like bubbles going across. I've seen this, and there was literally like somebody literally was like going like that with bubbles going across the room.
So what was that?
They have had instances in their house where they've had unexplained and uncomfortable things happening. So they've had various instances in the house where they've had Maria, somebody...
they felt something.
Yeah, and sometimes it's been a dog.
These are rational people.
Oh yeah, these are rational people.
So how do they explain it?
The previous people who owned the house had... issues, shall we say. They were when they bought the house, a couple of people said to them, oh, there's funny things going on in that house. And one of the things they found was lots of bones buried in the garden, dog bones. But just going back to the question about how they dealt with it, so at various times her particularly would feel like something was climbing across her. And anyway, one night he'd had enough of it, the dad, he was home, and he just effed them out of it.
When you say them now,
whatever was doing this thing, and told them, F off, don't come back, just F off.
Find another house to spook.
Yeah, and no problem since.
That's hilarious. And she said to you at the beginning that she didn't believe in any of this stuff, or she had no time for.
Oh, I had chills. I was sitting there, I was standing listening to her, and I was getting all these goose pimples. And that's one way to deal with it. So you can turn the coat inside out, or else you can kind of take a stronger, more verbal line
and shout at them.
Did
you ever hear a story, and I heard this numerous times in Laois, if you go into a field where there's a fairy fort or a fairy bush after dark, that you won't be able to get out of the field until it's daylight again. Have you ever heard of that, Brian?
I never heard that, but I used to hear people saying you'd have to ask permission of going into certain fields, and there were certain stones, and obviously the hawthorn tree was a big thing. And sometimes before you went into a field, a farmer would have to ask permission. Of who, I don't know, but I guess...
I remember growing up hearing these stories of people who would walk around the perimeter of the field, but there'd be no gap, there'd be no fence, there'd be no gate, and it appears then when daylight comes, but that would be because of the fairy fort or the fairy bush. But there you go. I do believe, as I said to you, I'm not going to test it.
And then both of us saw The Weir recently, Conor MacPherson's fantastic play, and it's full of this, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It kind of brought me right back to childhood and hearing stories from my grandparents.
You spoke to an academic now who can trace some of our beliefs, and they do go all the way back to pagan times, do they?
All the way back. Dr. Jenny Butler is a lecturer in the Study of Religious Department in UCC, and previously she published a study called Fairy Lore and Landscape. So that really looked at the connections between beliefs and traditions and our landscape. Now, she began by setting some of our beliefs around fairy forts in a very pre-Christian context.
These mounds are part of a tradition that is specifically connected to Samhain time. You know, there's in Irish myth, there's different cycles or collections of stories And in the Fenian cycle, which is about Fionn Mac Cumhail, there's a story about the Sidhe opening up at Samhain. So this word Sidhe has three interrelated meanings in Old Irish. And one meaning is Sidhe as the otherworldly beings, which is translated as fairies, so the fairies themselves. And it's thought that the fairies, or the Sidhe, got their name from the mounds or the hollow hills. The landscape itself is associated with the spiritual world, and the reference to the mounds opening at Samhain is this, you know, the other world being closer, and all kinds of spirits, including the Sidhe, otherworldly beings being around, including the Pooka. Samhain is also known as, or Halloween is known as Pooka Night in Ireland. So the Pooka is a being, an otherworldly being that is sometimes takes the form of a horse.
It's interesting because I wonder sometimes, was it a self-protective measure that certain stories and legends grew up around certain things? Like, I think Killeeny, Ringfort sometimes became Killeeny, unconsecrated burial grounds, and perhaps society didn't want people interfering with that.
When we think of the hollow hills of Ireland, or the mounds in the landscape, or the Sidhe that open up at Samhain, so there are pre-Celtic mounds like those at the Hill of Tara in County Meath, and sometimes ring forts were used for other purposes where something, you know, needed to be sensitively dealt with, like burials.
Do you think, and maybe it's difficult for you to assess this, are we losing that connection with those beliefs that we held for thousands of years, probably?
Customs and folklore changes over time, traditions change. The core feeling or the core atmosphere of the Festival of Samhain is still there.
That's Dr. Jenny Butler. Brian, we have messages coming in about getting trapped in a field. I'm glad it's not just in Laois, because it happens in Sligo as well. Sinead tells me that her elderly neighbour told her, if you go into a fairy fort field at night, then you won't find the gate until the morning. Bernadette's in Meath, and she says getting lost in a field was called standing on a stray sod. So there you go.
Never heard that. But the bottom line is, don't go into a fairy fort field at night.
No, I think that's good advice, Brian. Very good advice. Thank you so much. Brian O'Connell there reporting. And now David Coleman will be here a little bit later on answering all of your parenting questions. Still some time to get them in. The WhatsApp number 0870 32 32 32. Next though, why the workplace pension you're not availing of could offer you a better deal than the auto enrolment scheme, which is coming into effect soon. We'll find out about that after this quick break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.